Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Amy Barton.
And I'm Trace Kerr. The other day, my daughter and I, we've been watching Stranger Things, and I was having all sorts of flashbacks. There's arcades and Trapper Keepers and all that sort of stuff. And you and I got talking about what happens in the past. Maybe doesn't need to stay there. So today, we're going to take a nostalgia trip. So hold on. It's everything you never knew you wanted to know about the 70s, 80s, and the 90s.
A fixture of my late 70s and early 80s experience was the mercury thermometer. So for you younger folks, the mercury thermometer is that glass tube with the markings on it for the different temperatures. It's got a little metal end, and it is the most dangerous thing in your house. Absolutely, by far.
Don't drop it. Everyone would panic.
So you either stick it in your armpit or under your tongue, or in worst case scenario, it could be used rectally. That is bad news. Mom would make you sit down. You had to be seated or laying down and ready. And then you got instructions. Don't bite. You need to hold it with your lips, under your tongue, because this contains mercury that can expand at a predicted rate that tells the temperature. And it's poisonous. And so the mercury thermometer, they've been around since 1714. And I think you could see them in stores for quite a bit into my adulthood. But apparently since 2012, they have been decreasingly used. Many countries have banned them. You don't see them in use for people anymore. They're still used in other places where people aren't putting them into their body. But the problem is, what I thought was the problem as a kid, is that if you ingested the liquid, and worse yet, if you've broken this, you also are ingesting glass. There's so many perils.
Yeah.
I remember an exciting time where we did, I'm the one who dropped everything. A thermometer, things happened, a thermometer was dropped. And it was the coolest thing because my mom spent forever in the kitchen picking up all the glass and making sure she collected every single, the mercury beads up. Mm-hmm. So she had all the little beads of mercury. So it was the most interesting and most terrifying thing. And I always thought ingesting the mercury was the biggest problem, but apparently that isn't. It's actually inhaling it is a bigger problem. You could actually have health problems with the vapor. Ingesting, it's a bummer, but it's not the big deal breaker that I thought it was as a kid.
Huh.
You're not going to die.
Okay. So let's move on and talk about laser discs, because I had no idea about these.
Yes, I have viewed a laser disc in my lifetime, friends. The laser disc was actually invented in 1978. And my favorite part of this topic was that it was sold and marketed by MCA Discovision.
Discovision?
So
I'm
good.
Seeing that with, like, you know,
strobing
the block light. Font.
Yeah,
coming across the screen, almost like reading rainbow. Discovision.
Yeah, with some lines underneath or trailing.
Oh, yeah.
Something. The laser disc, for those uninitiated who don't know, it is record-sized, but it's a video format. You could record movies. And the plus of them is they're gigantic. It's the same concept as a DVD, but it's huge. In the U.S., about 2% of households had a Laserdisc in 98. Although in Japan in 99, 10% of households had it. So some of these were interesting to read, how things hung on in other parts of the world or how we hung on to things. The Laserdisc died out pretty quickly for us.
I don't remember. Okay, so you're saying 98.
I think it was the last, the 2% of the U.S. had them in 98.
Because 97, Anson was born. So I think maybe I was busy. I was in a fog.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really remember
late 70s and
laser
80s.
Discs Mm-mm. at all. I mean, I remember tapes, and then it seemed like, boom, we had CDs.
Yeah. We were busy watching the VHS Betamax wars. And that is another video format war. The Betamax was invented in 1975. It appeared in stores in November of 75, so you could buy it for Christmas. But the Betamax lost the videotape war to VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
They ceased making recorders in 02, and March 2016 was the last time you could buy a tape, which is really long.
2016? Really?
That's some nostalgia lovers making Betamax tapes, I think.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I remember the Ithamedises had a Betamax, and we watched, I think, Robin Hood.
Because now we're just down to, and isn't there still a Blockbuster? Isn't there one Blockbuster left in the United States?
I like the idea that there will always be one.
Man, because that was Friday night. I mean, you think Netflix, okay, you think picking out a Netflix thing is annoying? Like, you've made dinner, you sit down. now we're going to pick something. 2 hours later, you still haven't picked something.
Yeah.
Try going to a Blockbuster on a Friday night and you're just walking around and the ones you want are gone because they're the new ones and they only have a couple. And then it's just you and like Shogun and something else that you weren't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cruising Hastings here in Spokane. Actually, Chris and I did that a lot when we were first married, so I have very fond memories. But you'd have the boxes. They would have an empty box in the front.
Yep.
And then you'd be like, this is the one. And you'd look and there was none left. Or there were some left, but the tape wasn't rewound. And
So then you had to, and then rewinding it, that took 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. I'm going to rewind the video. You can make some popcorn.
I know.
Maybe take a quick nap.
We're so spoiled. Pop it in, hit play. You're ready to go.
But that reminds me. So my sweet ride is an O2 Buick Century and I have a tape deck. And so my kids have never listened. We have got Kenny Rogers. And so if you want to listen to The Gambler, but it's on the other side, you push fast forward and it just makes this quiet whirring sound. And then when the kids have lost hope, it stops and it makes another click. And then it switches sides. And the exciting moment is that you're almost there. But there's two songs ahead of The Gambler. So you've got to gamble with the timeline. The 80s were fraught with peril, kids. Oh, media was not easy to access.
So much time
we
spent.
We suffered a lot.
We did. We suffered. Oh, and here's another way we suffered. So the probably the first computer someone our age, and our age, this is in the 70s and 80s. So I'm talking like a 9 or 10-year-old. It was something called the Speak and Spell. I need to play for you the sound of the Speak and Spell.
It's already in my head. As soon as you said the words, I'm like,
we will have a video up on our website that shows the Speak and Spell. It was probably the size of like a clipboard and it had the alphabet on there and then the computer screen. The computer screen looked like a calculator screen. You know, that's how advanced those little numbers and letters were. How sad is it that our first computer was a spelling game? It could do 200 spoken words, and actually it was quite ahead of its time. It was made by Texas Instruments, released in 1978. And then it had several different editions that came out until 1992. It had the first single chip voice synthesizer, so when you turned it on, this is what you would hear. That was the quintessential
sound.
Speak and Spell sound. And then when you were playing the game, it would tell you to spell a word, and then it would say the letters as you were entering them. So this one is for circuit.
Circuit. C-I-R-C-U-I-T. That is correct.
What was it, Hawking's?
Yes. They used the Speak and Spell voice for him.
That is correct. Now spell apple, and then you'd spell the next one. And one of the cool things about it was that the keyboard was in alphabetical order, in QWERTY keyboard order.
Yeah, we couldn't afford one. Didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't have a Speak and Spell?
No, but we did get we got a knockoff later version that is about the size of a modern laptop, and it had a QWERTY keyboard and a number thing, and you could do math and word games on it.
Yes. And they did have lots of different variations. And then I have another sound from the past here. So since we're talking about computers, before you had quick and easy Wi-Fi access, we had an old Commodore 64 computer.
Sweet.
When you wanted to get on the internet, you would click connect. And then your modem would reach out across the phone lines and talk to another modem, and you'd have a dial-up tone. It's 32 seconds long, but I'm not going to play the whole thing because it will kill your soul. But just imagine, every single time,
14-year-old you sitting at a computer.
You're trying to get out there. You want to play, you know, your Doom. Oh,
Doom.
You want to play Doom. You want to get on a chat thing and talk to your friends. You had to hear this first.
Oh, and the most beautiful sound is when it connects.
It was so good.
You know what the worst sound for a person on a dial-up modem is? The picking up of a handset somewhere else in the house. That is the sound of doom. For you young folks out there, what that did was sever your connection with the internet and open up the phone line again.
And then you just have to wait. Mom, I'm on the computer.
Yeah. No one wins there either, because I feel like you had to hang up the handset, and once you disconnected, it didn't give you...
Oh, yeah. No, that was the worst. You'd pick up the phone, and then you'd get that in your ear.
Yes.
And it would just squeal at you. Oh, yes. So loud. Well, what's some other technology that's just not... you were talking about leaded fuel. First, you're talking about mercury. Now you're talking about lead. It was a toxic time.
It was. All of mine, I'm like, oh my gosh, do you remember the smell of leaded fuel?
I do.
It's tetraethyl lead. And it was actually a fuel additive that helped with, that allowed engine compression to be raised substantially. It was highly effective and inexpensive and super poisonous and killing the atmosphere. Things happened in the 70s.
And the 80s. Yeah, we were really good. You know, we had DDT. We had lead fuel.
Oh, DDT, yeah.
Things are so much better now, children. So much better.
So much.
Except for all that, you know, global warming. But we're not talking about that right
aviation
now.
Aviation fuel. You can still get your leaded fuel, folks. You just have to be able to fly a plane to.
Oh,
or
good.
Have access.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Carburetors, carbureted engines where you had to use a choke. And I confess, this is something that I should have known in my lifetime, but we were riding snowmobiles at my aunt's house, and I killed the engine because I've never ridden them very much. And she's like, well, you got to use a choke to start it. And I'm walking away, said, thanks. And realized I have no, I think there's, you pump a lever and a blah, blah. And Chris is like, yeah, my husband says it does blah, blah. And I'm not even going to try to tell you again because he told me and it made sense. It does things. It helps, starts the engine. I don't know. It's a thing I should know, but thank goodness we don't have to do that wizardry anymore to start our car.
Although I think you still need to use a choke on some motorcycles.
Yeah, there are still vehicles, small engines, lawnmowers, rototillers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to something that's a little more laid back.
Yes.
We're going to talk about card catalogs.
It's very laid back.
So laid back. So
I feel like I need to talk in my librarian voice.
There we go. Shh. Quiet.
Let's bring our volume down, everybody.
Shh. So if you go to a library today and you want to look up a book, you go to the computer and you type in the title and it tells you where it is and where it is on the shelf. It's using that Dewey Decimal System.
And it offers you a digital version so you don't even have to walk to the shelf.
Right. I mean, you could even, I know. Why look it up? I could just ebook it. Yes. Yeah. You know what's interesting? So it was the first published magazine by the American Library Association was to complain that card catalogs were not standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1876.
Mrs. Yashahara talked a lot about that, the standardization of the Dewey Decimal System.
Yes,
she cared about that a lot.
Well, because, and why is it important? Well, because if you have, you know, thousands of books in a library, you need to be able to find them with your Dewey Decimal number. That's a category, and then you've got the author's name. So 636.1 is horses.
Okay.
636.8, yes, is cats.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I used to work in the library as an assistant.
Oh, I kind of envy that.
And I got to tell you, the 636s, the pets, that got checked out a lot. Well, even though you have these numbers, that doesn't do you any good if you don't have some sort of catalog. So in the 1990s, because when I was in college, we were still starting to switch over to the computer. You'd have these giant file boxes, and in them were thousands of little index cards, and you'd have to pull, you know, so you'd go to like GA through GI and you'd pull that open and you'd go through all of these cards individually until you found your author's last name.
Yes.
And then on that card was the title of the book, and then it also had where it was located in the library. Mm-hmm. So you knew, okay, it's this thing, so you'd have to go to this floor and find your book.
It's one of those lovely tactile experiences too. And the card catalog themselves were, they're probably 100 years old in most libraries because they've been used since whenever. I don't know how, when did you say Dewey started?
Well, in 1780, that's the first one.
Okay.
And that was in Vienna. And then it developed over the years. So the English and French kept taking different cracks at it.
Yeah.
Jefferson apparently had one that he gave to somebody, and it was the most disorganized thing they'd ever seen.
Based on how he felt about things.
Yeah. And then here, you know, in 1876, people are complaining that there, because some catalogs were based off the title, and some were based off the author, and some were based off the subject.
So we finally all came together and agreed.
So Dewey was like, okay, guys, we need to calm down. We need to get this all organized. Yes. And so that was how you had to find your library book.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit.
It was not instant.
No, but I have to admit that like 94, Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, 94, I'm doing my senior stuff, and you're going to the giant libraries. And you had a choice at that time.
Yes.
You could go to the computer, mm-hmm. or you could go to the card catalog. And I got to tell you, most of us went to the card catalog because we were like, oh, that computer takes forever. This is so much faster.
Somebody's going to pick up the handset.
to dig through all of these pieces of paper. So much faster. Yeah.
I heard somebody, I was chatting about this episode coming up, and they mentioned that the card catalogs from a university sold for big money. The actual drawer, the little, what would you call that piece of furniture? Whatever that, the card catalogs, the drawers, sold for big money because they're beautiful. They're old. They're hand, you know, they're these great hardwood drawer fixture things. And can I bring the general tone of the conversation up with something I forgot to tell you I researched?
Yes.
I know the beeper king of Spokane, and so do you.
The beeper king?
The beeper king.
What do you mean like a beeper? Like a
pager.
Like a pager?
Yes. The pager beeper, that was something that was definitely in our lifetime, was kind of the precursor to the cell phone. You could get a hold of somebody, and you'd call up the beeper, and you'd put in alphanumeric codes, and it would read out a message on the beeper. And so,
and it would go beep, 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 beep. They were really annoying.
Yes.
I mean, you knew when somebody had, doctors still have them, but I mean, you had to be, and they were not cheap.
No. And they are not obsolete yet, but they are not in use by the general public. But they were, this is a little love note to you, 30 Rock fans. The Beeper King of New York is a part of 30 Rock, and they talk about how he's the last Beeper King because nobody else is selling these. But we know the Beeper King of Spokane. His name is Jeremiah Pahek, and he has, what's his company? He's JP Telecom. And so he has a brisk business now in what most people kind of think is an obsolete technology. He will buy these little babies. He's smart enough to fix them up and then resell them to businesses that still need them. And we went out and we talked with Jeremiah because he is our, like, our podcast godfather, would you say?
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And so we've talked about this with him. And at the time, I'm like, that's weird. But if you're making a living, high five. But this is actually, they are much more reliable. It's an instant communication. They don't rely on the cell network. Like if you're in the bottom of a basement, you probably aren't making a phone call. But your beeper can get that line out. So they're still very important in many emergency industries. And so this is a real thing. It's much to my skepticism. It's a brisk business still. It's an important business. So we know the Beeper King of Spokane.
Wow.
High five, Jeremiah.
I kind of forgot about all of that. That's right.
Yeah. So we're kind of a big deal because we know the Beeper King of Spokane.
I like being a big deal, even in a small way.
Yeah.
Before we go, Brain Junk is going to take just a little break for the holidays.
There's cookies.
We're going to be back with full episodes on January 1st, 2019.
Yes.
Until then, don't worry, you're not going to go through withdrawals. We'll be flooding your ears with the occasional brain fart. So look for short bits that will make you laugh, and if Amy has anything to say about it, they will gross you out. Brain farts will be coming out randomly on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
It's my sincere desire to make everybody snort at least once during a brain fart. We're on Facebook and Instagram as Brain Junk Podcast, and you can find us on Twitter as @MyBrainJunk. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.
Have a good holiday.